One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hey there, guys. Welcome to Tell Me Your Tales podcast. Thanks for joining me for another week. This week's show with the original guest, Josh Harris, the marathon Australian representative, 29-minute 10K guy, 64-minute half marathon guy, but been injured for the last 6 months. Really wanted to get him on the show. Really haven't spoken to him for a while, so it was a good opportunity for both of us to catch up. And yeah, I think it's really important that we get people on the show when they're going through ups and downs, not just when they're running really good. And Josh is a great example of someone who's been through some pretty high highs and some pretty low lows in the last 12 months. So grateful that he gave some opportunity to be on the show and, yeah, shared the bit of his story and how he's tracking. Please, if you got the opportunity, it won't take really long to reach out to Josh. He kind of speaks about how when you're not running really well, the interactions, especially online, just seem to drop off and people don't want to really know you as much as they once did. So I think here at Tell Me Your Tales, we've got a pretty good community that we're slowly building, and I think there's some amazing listeners who have some really good stories themselves and are really passionate about sport and health and well-being and all those kind of things. So if you guys could take 30 seconds out of your day and hit up Josh on one of the socials, I think he'd really appreciate that. And yeah, just say you heard him here on Tell Me Your Tales and you enjoyed it, or you didn't enjoy it, or yeah, you were thinking about him, or hearing him got you through your run that probably half of you guys are on at the moment. So thanks, guys, and enjoy this chat with Josh Harris. He's back. Welcome, Josh Harris. You're the first guest, and now I think I'm up to maybe episode like 60 or something, and we've got you back on the show. Welcome, mate.
Yeah, thanks, Brady. It's good to be back on. It's probably been nearly 6 months, I reckon, since I've been on last.
I was just thinking about this morning when I was running. So you were the first guest, and then I think we got you on maybe just after you got selected for the Australian team to go to the World Champs at London, and then you came on after that as well to tell us about it. And now, oh, and you did make a bit of a cameo appearance when we did a bit of Road to Berlin stuff, so this must be appearance number 5.
Yeah, I think there was like a pre and a two-part interview to start with there, and yeah, you were down at Lonnie 10 as well, so I've been on a few times, that's for sure.
That's it, yeah. I remember doing that one in the hotel room, but that's good. And that probably goes into the reason why I wanted to have you on again, was because, I don't know, sometimes I think mainstream media kind of stuff, people performing well or kind of the flavour of the month, and we hear all about them. And then sometimes when injuries strike or things aren't going well in people's lives, we kind of just cut them off and forget about them. But considering we've got a podcast-like format, it was important for me to cover people when they're at their highs and their lows. So, yeah, I kind of reached out to you, and thanks for giving some time to share what's been happening through probably a low part of your career.
Yeah, no worries, mate. I'm looking forward to it. And, yeah, it's a good point you raise there. Like, in that phase, I guess, where I was on the show pretty regularly, like, I was doing a lot of media and, you know, you'd get fans messaging you pretty much on the daily, whereas at the moment things are pretty low key, and you can definitely tell just by things like social media interactions. Not that I've been using it as much as normal, but you know, you can definitely tell when you're kind of the flavour of the month, I guess.
Yeah. Well, maybe just in case listeners, we've picked up a few listeners since you've been on the show last time, but maybe do you want to reintroduce yourself? I know usually get the guests to do this, and you probably don't need to do it again, but just in case people haven't listened or haven't gone back and heard those episodes yet.
Yep, so I'm Josh Harris, a 27-year-old marathon runner from Launceston down in Tassie. I was selected to run in the World Champs last year in London. Things were going really well in the lead up, ran a couple of PBs, 10K half marathon and whatnot. And then overseas, 2 weeks prior to the race, I got a stress fracture in my talus bone and had to withdraw from the World Champs after 28K. And then it's been a battle with the injury ever since. And currently, right now, I'm about 10 days post-surgery, so still on the outer.
Yeah, right. Give us some times, mate. Just go through your 10, your half and marathon PB again, just to freshen people's minds.
Yep. 29:42 for the 10, 64:54 or something for the half, and then 2:17:08 for the marathon.
Yeah, all right, so we're dealing with quite a quick guy here, if you hadn't tuned in before to hear Josh's story in PBs, but I guess take us back to, a surgery 10 days ago, but take us back to what happened after World Champs, and then how come you're having surgery again 6 months kind of past it?
Yeah, so it's just a really tricky injury, and it's really rare, and not many cases seem to be exactly the same, so the advice that you get has just been really conflicting the whole time. Initially, they said to me, have a period of about 6 weeks in a moon boot, and then kind of a period of like 6 weeks of walking and then building in some strength stuff slowly. And at that point, I could start to do things like cycling and all that kind of stuff. So I went through the first 6 weeks or so, and I was progressing decently. And then when I got to that strength stuff, it was just too much, and it just wasn't healing properly, and I definitely took a backward step in that phase, and it started to hurt quite a bit again. At the same time, I'm getting advice from people in Launceston that, like, by their own admission, like, they've never really dealt with talus injuries in sports people, so it's been hard for them to kind of give, great advice. And then I've got people in Melbourne as well kind of overseeing it, and those professionals, they're busy, they've got their own cases and stuff that they're working with, and they're kind of touching base like every so often. And so it got to the point after that setback where I had to be back in the moon boot again, and the Melbourne docs saw some of my MRIs and CT scans from like November. And that's when they thought, oh, okay, it might be best for you to go into surgery here because the bone's just not healing as well as we want it to. And with the little crack there, it's hard to really differentiate on the MRIs whether it's going well or not so well. And it was only once we got those really kind of high-level professional opinions that they suggested that surgery would be the right move forward in terms of getting back on track, hopefully.
Yeah, it sounds messy. It sounds like, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, but you go to World Champs, you have pretty good doctors and physios and all that support there when you're representing Australia, but then you come home and it's like, do you have to find your own way a bit and kind of sort out your local physios or doctors or whatever and then try to manage these people in Melbourne as well?
Yeah, it's pretty much spot on. And like, my team's awesome, but it's just, I guess, not being in a team sport as well, like, makes it hard because, you know, you've got your physios, you've got your doctors, you've got the TIS, you've got all those people trying to liaise with you, and at the same time, like, none of them have really dealt with talus injuries as well, so they're a bit unsure, and they're trying to talk to each other, to me, and then you've got the really kind of professional guys that have dealt with a couple of these injuries. that, as I said, like, they're busy, they've got their own stuff on, that they're kind of interacting, I guess, a little bit less frequently. But at the end of the day, they're the ones that I should be listening to, and the Lonnie crew are fully in agreeance with that. And then it's just the Taylors as well. Like, you read some academic articles and, you know, some people, everyone's got through fine, and then other articles, the success rate of coming back from this injury is none. So it's just a really unknown, I guess.
Well, I remember you telling me last time that you kind of took the risk in the race and did the team doctor at London say that, you know, this is a risky kind of injury to be dealing with?
Yeah, he said it was a risky kind of injury. I don't, you know, you can't really say definitively, but I don't really think that the decision to run has changed anything to this point in the rehab. And I know, on the positive side, I'm certainly sitting here right now knowing that I got that singlet and I got that opportunity. So I think that's definitely something that I'm really happy that I did.
Yeah, yeah. How you going with dealing with, like, the whole medical system and stuff? Like, that do your head in a bit, or have, like, the TIS doing that all for you?
Again, it's been a bit of a pain in the ass, to be honest, mate. Like, it's dealing with a lot of different people. Like, the GP in Lonnie has been amazing, like, getting me in just on the, you know, I flick him a message and he's like, oh, come in today, we'll sort you out for 10 minutes kind of thing, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
Physio Taz, they're my physio, they sponsor me as well, so they've been really good as well. And also the TIS, they've helped out with some financial stuff as well, but just it's just the combination of it all that's really hard to kind of communicate between all the involved people. And then at the same time, like, this surgery was obviously pretty expensive and I don't have private health, so it's kind of like that. Does the insurance from the Athletics Australia cover it because you injured yourself while you're overseas? And then I'm trying to sort that out right now because I think I should be able to get some help in that regard. But at the same time, like, it's hard then liaising with the relevant people at the insurance company and Athletics Australia as well.
Yeah, I could imagine you just start racking up phone calls and stuff and trying to get everyone on the same page.
Yeah, pretty much. And then at the same time, like, I'm in a bit of a lazy mood in terms of, like, admin type stuff, which hasn't been helping, I don't think.
Yeah. Well, the motivation's probably not there as well, is it? Like, it's just kind of a side job and you kind of can't be bothered writing back to emails and calling people and being on hold and all those kind of things.
Yeah, exactly right. And it's not that I'm not a motivated person, but it's just that I'm like, oh, that can wait a bit, and then one day passes and then you know what it's like, another day passes and kind of forget about it.
Yeah, for sure. Did they give you a percentage, like, chance that, like, the first thing, was it like, yeah, this is a 60% chance it's going to help out, or, you know, and then lead into surgery?
Probably the only percentages that I've got were prior to surgery. The surgeon, who's obviously in Melbourne, he said that he's probably dealt with maybe, like, more than 5, less than 10 Taylor stress fractures in his time, which is pretty low considering how qualified he is as a very good surgeon. And he said that, you know, somewhere between probably 2/3 and 3/4 have come good. Whether or not that means back to 100% of what you were before, I'm not sure. But then also one of the, I don't know if it was the assistant surgeon or the, one of the guys that was involved in the surgery anyway, he said that he's seen good outcomes. So that was positive. But at the same time, like, doing with some of the research and stuff I've done about it, it's case by case, and it's, I don't know, like, that my running future is so unknown right now. It could be, you know, I'm back to normal by the end of the year, running 100%. It could be I never run the same again. I really don't know.
Yeah, and how's your headspace with that? Like, is that, like, worrying, scary kind of thing?
It should be. I think I've handled it really, really well, to be honest. And I can't even tell you why, mate. It doesn't bother me as much as it should. Given that running, like, as you know, is pretty much my life. Like, I've sacrificed a lot of stuff in life to kind of try and make a world champs team and things like that. I don't know whether it's just my makeup as an individual that I'm pretty easygoing and I don't let that stuff get to me, or if it's the fact that I'm semi-satisfied, if that's it as well. I think that's definitely a good factor. You know, like, if that's it, then I can deal with what I've been able to achieve and be pretty happy with it. But then at the same time, like, I'm sitting here now and I'm really motivated to, like, I've got goals that I want to get back. I want to get back to the world champs and redeem myself. You know, I want to try and make an Olympics, although the marathon standard's picked up a lot since we last chatted even.
Yeah, but even like that world half team, and I know we've spoken about that in the past, like, your name would have been on that list if you were injury free after London, you'd like to think.
So, yeah, I was listening to your Inside Running podcast the other day, and I reckon it would have been interesting between Tom and I for that last spot, because I've ran a few seconds quicker than Tom for the half, which I think Cole Reavy has as well. But then Tom's marathon, kind of, you get why he's picked, because he's ran 2:14 and he was number 4 in the order. So I reckon I'd be in that discretionary spot, because obviously the other 4 are, I think the other 3 are a step above, and then Dijon's earned his time with his time.
With his half marathon, yeah, and I think we forgot to, we were a bit too focused. I'll listen back to that show because I had to do a few edits to that episode, and we were probably a bit harsh on Dijon looking at his 5K and 10K yeah. time and forgetting he's so far ahead with his actual, 64 mid, I think he was.
64.10, yeah. I listened to you say that, was one of the few things that I disagreed with, because he's never been on the same level over the 5 and 10 and on the track as well. So he's 15K run, I think, at that C to C or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And then I think he definitely deserves a go at it.
Yeah, yeah. And that's when I said that, kind of. I don't think Julian agreed with me, but I can see him being the top Australian over there. Like, he's a bit unpredictable and he could easily have a big breakthrough run and be ahead of every other Australian on the line, I reckon.
Yeah, like he's got a bit of that hit-and-miss aspect about him, but he's hitting it more often over the long distances on the road, that's for sure. I think he might have had a slight break over the Christmas period, but if he can get back and put in 8 weeks at a high mileage, then I think that's the recipe for him to run well over there.
Yeah, I reckon there's something, like, just something a bit wild about him. Like, he's not afraid to kind of go out at a ridiculous pace and just back himself. And I think when you're in a race, you just need to sometimes just not think and just go on instinct and get out there and race some people.
Yeah, he's always been like that, but it's just now that he's fit enough to be able to do it that it's working out for him.
Yeah, yeah. Well, how are you coping with kind of, like, you know, listening to running podcasts and checking the running news and not being able... And I know you were at Zatopek the other week. You did a bit of work for us getting some audio with the boys afterwards for Inside Running. But, yeah, how are you coping with being still immersed in it but not being able to do it?
It's a really good question, and it's something that I was actually thinking about before I came on, because... I'm to the point where I'm involved slightly, but I'm not immersed. Like, your podcasts are the only podcasts I listen to regarding running. So, like, that's kind of giving me something every week, or, you know, I might have a bad week and then just catch up a couple of weeks later, which I probably did around the New Year time. But yours are the only podcasts I've been listening to, so it's not like I'm flat out with that. And then I haven't really involved myself at all with any athletics locally, but at the same time, I guess probably a good way to summarise how much I've been involved is that the news you would talk about on your Inside Running podcast, 90% of that I already know,
yeah.
But my knowledge outside of that is pretty limited. Like, I'm not following it as closely as I was. If that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. And touch on how you said before, like, your interactions on social media. You've kind of, like, noticed a bit of a drop off there now that you're not performing at the level you were.
Yeah, so, like, before World Champs was the biggest social media patch I've had. Like, things were booming. Like, I got 700 likes on a couple of Facebook posts, which is pretty solid. Like, if I posted something today, I'd probably get 100, I reckon. And then just... there's not much to post about, I guess. As an athlete who, like, I generally put myself out there, there's just not much going on, so there's not a heap to post about. So you know, I'll upload a cross-training session to Strava and I'll get about 100 kudos, which is probably about 30% of what I was getting back when I was running. And then just, you know, just things like your Facebook inbox and stuff like that. Like, I'd have very random people messaging me like pretty regularly early last year, whereas now that's kind of dropped off and you kind of, you get it, but at the same time, you feel like, okay, if you were someone with slightly, probably not the same easygoing nature and someone who was probably a bit more upset about this, then you'd probably be taking it pretty hard, and I can get that.
Yeah, well, look what it says about our society, that we only, reach out to people and want to follow them and hit like on their posts and stuff when things are going well.
Yeah, I know, likes don't really mean much, but you see, Instagram, for example, like I was getting 300 likes on a post, and now, you know, anything over 100 and I'm doing okay. So it's interesting for sure.
Yeah, and have your followers like dropped off and stuff? Like, have people like clicked on? Because I've done that on Strava before. Like, someone might be injured for 2 years, and they put something up, and I'm like, oh, I'm still following this person. They're never going to get back to where they are, so I'll just like click unfollow because I won't think it's there's no value in following them anymore. Which is it's not a personal attack on that person, but I'm like, well, I want to see what good. Well, runners in good form, what sessions they're doing, so I can use that as a bit of a yardstick. But at the same time, I've done it as well.
Mate, I've done it as well. So I can't really talk. I think on Strava, which is that's probably a good indicator because people on Strava follow you for your running ability. I think I was at about 2,770 or something when I got injured. I noticed a couple of times it dropped by about 5. I think as we stand now, because I had a look before I came on, I think it's at about 2780. So I'm sure I've lost quite a few followers, but I've gained 15 more or something like that.
Yeah, but what about like friendships and stuff as well? Has there been people who have just kind of like slowly, you know, dropped off because they don't want to associate? I'm building this up like it's like you've got to die or something. But but have you noticed like a few extra, or I suppose maybe flip it, have you found some people come into your life as supportive that you probably wouldn't have noticed if you hadn't got injured?
It's an interesting question. There are probably two ways I can think about that. In terms of supportive people that have come on board due to being injured, I'm probably going to say not really. There, on the other hand, there have certainly been people that I've connected with a lot less since the injury, and that's fair enough. Like, I probably do the same. Like, you congratulate someone after a good run, for instance, and then that's the only time you speak to them in, you know, 6 months or something till they do something good again. I guess that's just how it is. But then on the other hand, I think the different lifestyle that I've lived, I guess, since I've been running has enabled me to probably meet some people and probably a couple of examples of some supportive people that I found that I probably wouldn't have found had I been living the standard running life.
Yeah, so I guess, do you mean like you've jumped out of kind of the running circles and into probably more of a social circle where elite sport's not the be-all and end-all?
Yeah, spot on. Like, there are people that I've met over the last 6 months that I don't think I would have met if I was how I was, say, 6 months ago. And not necessarily people that I don't think I would have met, but, like, I've got a girlfriend now, for example, and I met her basically through cross-training with one of my mates in his training group. She just does it to keep fit kind of thing. And if I was out there running 200 Ks a week, I wouldn't be cross training and all that kind of stuff.
Well, you mean like pool running or something? Just bumped into her at the deep end.
So we were up training at, up at St. Pat's College there. My mate Jordan Tyler, good 1500 meter runner.
Yep.
He had a tibia stress fracture. So we pretty much pool ran together for, 8 weeks, and Geordie's coach, David Ray, was helping my girlfriend out with just some kind of keeping fit and stuff like that. So she jumped in the pool for a bit, and then as we got a bit closer, she started doing more pool running and less running. So, yeah.
And it all just blossomed from there.
Yeah, it did.
Hey, well, I guess maybe that leads into a good question about what are you replacing your time with? So, like, mate, is it all that cross-training? Like, I'm thinking you would have been hitting 20-plus hours of running or core or gym or physio or whatever it be. You know, what are you doing with that extra 20 hours a week now?
Yeah, that's it's really varied. So there's probably a few different phases of it. I guess I don't think I did any cross-training for the first 3-4 weeks. But then I started pool running probably at least 5 times a week. I was probably cross-training 5 hours a week at that point. In the school holidays, it got up to maybe 9 when I could start doing a little bit of cycling for that brief patch. So I guess in that school period, I probably worked a bit more for a couple of months there. Like, instead of working 2 or 3 days a week, I was doing probably averaging 4 days a week, so that was taking up a bit more time. Instead of running in the morning before work, I just wouldn't worry, so you just have a bit of a sleep in. And then on the other hand, as soon as you finish work, you'd go up and go to the pool and cross train, and so by the time you got home, it was a pretty standard kind of get home time anyway. So because you know, when you got the pool, you've got to drive there, you've got to have a shower afterwards and get dressed and all that stuff that you don't have to do with running. So you're kind of in there for an hour, but you're kind of at the pool for 2 hours, if that makes sense.
Yeah, a lot different than just running at your front door and the run started within, like, 30 seconds, you're moving.
Yeah, and then on the other hand, like, I definitely supplemented a bit of those hours for focusing on the party scene, mainly on the weekend, but sometimes in the week as well. But that's settled a bit lately too. Probably not just because I've got a girlfriend now, but probably just because I've been a bit more serious about my weight and stuff like that, which I'm actually pretty happy with.
Yeah, well, maybe I'd have got that on a note here, because you were on quite a big streak, weren't you? Like, how many weeks are we talking?
So there were a couple of different streaks. The last one was I'd been out or drank or whatnot. I think it was 22, 23 Saturday nights in a row. At one point there was, I was doubling up, sometimes tripling up, 6-8 weeks in a row, and they've slowly, those streaks have kind of ended. And then because I missed that Saturday streak last week, on the Sunday night, my girlfriend kind of encouraged me. She's like, oh, what if maybe you could just say it's you've drank at least once every week. And so I actually had quite a few beers on Sunday night, so I've still got a technical streak that I've done that, but I've definitely cut back on that, but I've had some really good times, and kind of just a different lifestyle, I guess, like something that even as a runner I could go out a fit, like probably once a week or once a fortnight, and it wouldn't really affect my training if I didn't have a marathon in the next month or two. But I was just able to enjoy it guilt-free, and I didn't have to get up for that long run on Sunday, and which can be pretty tough work.
Yeah, has it hindered the recovery, though? Like, you're one of our best marathoners, and 22 weeks in a row, like, does that, you know, mess around with the rehab of the bone healing again, or did you get all clear to kind of let your hair down?
Yeah, it's a good question, and I don't think there's really a... You can't really say whether or not it is or not. I personally, over the years, have never really found a correlation between going out and having a night and then impacting your running. But then on the same hand, I guess if you go out on a night and you're on your foot all night, then, you know, if you've got a broken bone, even if you're in a moon boot, it's still probably not ideal. And so I guess it's hard to say. But at the same time, you know, I was getting a lot of happiness out of that. And so had I not been going out and having fun and enjoying the social scene, then I don't really know what I would have been doing. And I don't really know if I would have been any happier. So I guess it's a bit of a balance between having fun, healing. And as I said, I don't know whether or not it's been an influence on healing or not. It may have been. It may not, I'm not sure.
Yeah, we'll put that on the flip side, and just staying home and feeling sorry for yourself and having, you know, very little contact socially with people around your same age, and then it's like that, oh, poor me, I'm injured and I can't go out. But it's an interesting kind of balance.
It is, and I think I've definitely cut that back a bit lately, which I think will be good. And now I'm on crutches at the moment, so I've had surgery. It's time, like, I've got to get this thing right. Whether or not it was going to heal or it wasn't going to heal prior to the surgery, I don't know. But I feel like just the fact that I've had that intervention now, like, I've got to do the right things to get this right. And I think mentally that screw in my foot right now is a really good thing.
Yeah, and it's almost like, yeah, you got through the first strike, and now it's like, all right, second strike, let's attack this properly now.
Yeah, not necessarily that I wasn't attacking it appropriately to start with, but my mind was just always in that doubt, like, is this thing actually getting better, if that makes sense?
Yeah, well, I've heard people say that before about kind of moon boots and stuff, like you'd rather be in plaster and know it's going to heal 6 weeks later, rather than, it's similar to kind of ligament damage and things like that as well, or your Achilles, like, it's kind of like you'd rather break a bone and put it in plaster for 6 weeks and you know you're coming out of it, it's going to be fixed, rather than all that doubting it.
Yeah, well, you hope it's going to be fixed. And then on the flip side as well, you know, the physio has said, like, there's some justification for you to be without this moon boot, getting a bit more blood flow to that foot, and because the moon boot probably suits kind of weight through the heel, which is kind of closer to the injury as well. So there's all those things that are just a bit unknown about it. So I'm kind of enjoying being on crutches. Actually, I'm not. I hate it. It's terrible. But just the non-weight bearing, I feel like that can only do good things.
Yeah. And what's the surgeon say? Like, what are they thinking? How many weeks and stuff now before you can test it out?
Yeah, so again, it's a case by case, and we'll just play it as it goes. But the rough timeline that he's provided me with is, and I have to see him 6 weeks post surgery, and I'll get an X-ray like the day or two before that. So 6 weeks on crutches, no weight bearing unless fully essential. I'm probably 10 days now, probably to the point where if I needed to, I could walk. He said, you know, if you get up in the middle of the night and you need to go to the toilet, or you need to put a little bit of weight on your foot to make getting around the kitchen easier so you don't have to carry stuff on crutches, you know, then do that if it's strong enough. But, yeah, so 6 weeks on the crutches, then he reckons 6 weeks back in the moon boot, and then hopefully like 6 weeks of walking, and then probably in the latter part of that building up some minor strength stuff, and then hopefully we'd be given a green light sometime in winter to be able to do some walk jogs.
It's a long time though, isn't it? Winter, like, it's, that'd be nearly 12 months out, won't it?
Yeah, I know. But, you know, having missed 6 months, knowing that you've got so long ahead of you, there's not much you can do. You can't change it. You just got to be patient with it. And, you know, if it's 12 months or 18 months or 2 years, I guess the fire's still there for me to try and get back, so it's not really that important. I've just got to try and do the right things.
Yeah, and I'm guessing you haven't locked in a comeback race and kind of set yourself lofty goals to be hitting this kind of mileage by this month or anything like that?
Nah, like, I had to sit down with the TIS, probably it was about September, I reckon, and try and set some goals based off the information I had. And, you know, I said to them that I'd love to go over to Europe and maybe try and run a 5-10K PB in their summer. And if things went perfectly, I would have loved the opportunity to either go to World Half or to get back and race like our state champs or something like that. But, you know, that's completely out the window at this point. And I think the best thing for me is to not even worry about any of that stuff. The only two things I've got in my head right now, trying to qualify for Tokyo, and then, you know, again, if things go really well, I'd love to qualify for Doha World Champs. I know the marathon standards went up, but I reckon a lot of people would forgo the chance to run in Doha at the World Champs, whereas, you know, I'd do anything to get that redemption if the foot was right.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm not sure if our three marathon men from Com Games are going to be putting their hand up to go to Doha, so it could be a similar situation where, you know, similar to London, that next tier of athlete could get a call up.
Yeah, so I don't know. Like, if things go well and I'm able to walk jog in June, for example, you know, that might mean that I'm up to a decent mileage by the end of the year. And then I might be able to do, like, a Lake Biwa next year and qualify for Doha, but, you know, that's all just talk at the moment. Like, I got to get it right first, and, you know, I might my days might be done, mate.
Yeah, yeah, it could go either way, couldn't it? Like, it's plenty of possibilities there. Hey, I don't know how much you can disclose, but what's the relationship with the TIS like? Is that like you're on a couple-year contract, or you've got to hit specific goals or times to keep the funding? I'm not sure if you can go into details and talk us through that, but just for, there's a lot of kind of, you know, guys like me who, and kind of fun runners and general punters and just people banging out marathons on weekends and stuff like that, that probably would love to know the ins and out of what it's like to be supported by an institute of sport.
Yeah, it's a discretionary one. So when I ran my qualifier at Lake Biwa last year, given the circumstances of how the marathon was playing out, and it looked likely that I'd go to London, so they jumped on board. And usually it's a 12-month contract, but I think I jumped on with like 3 months left in the contract, so they gave me a 15-month contract. They supported me really, really well because I made world champs.
Just on that though, Josh, does that do your head in a bit? Like, you've been slaving away by yourself for, what, 6, 8 years, banging out huge mileage, like some really impressive runs, and then you finally, like, that isn't that when they need to be supporting you, not, oh, you've made the team now we'll come on board and help you out?
You're spot on. I don't want to say too much, but I'm really grateful for the fact that I'm on the TIS given this injury. Like I right now feel like I'm a bit of a liability. Like, all I've done for the TIS, and whether, you know, they could have picked me up earlier, I suppose, and all I've done for them is run a half marathon PB and then DNF at World Champs and then be injured for a year. So I haven't done too much for them, but I'm really grateful for their support.
The question probably, yeah, it wasn't directed just at the TIS, but it's probably that whole, I think over in the States or the UK, it's like that lottery funding where it's kind of, if you're top five in the world or whatever, you get all the funding. Yet there's all these guys who are ranked 8th and 10th and trying to get there, but they can't get there because they don't have the funding to be able to train full-time. It just, on paper, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, like I got to the World Champs on my own.
Yeah.
So going back to what I was saying, sorry, like, yeah, you're right. They gave me above and beyond support to help with the World Championships, which I think they do for people that get in the teams. So that was fantastic. Like, to be on there for 3 months and to get the support that I got was awesome. I've got till the end of the financial year with the TIS, and then I guess it gets reevaluated. And I guess that'll be to their discretion whether or not I get to go around again. Like, I would like to think that given that I haven't had an opportunity to prove myself, that I'd get another year leeway to get myself right. But I guess it's with an injury of this severity, like, they've probably got every right to doubt that I'll come back. So whatever they decide, I guess in June, I'll be okay with. But yeah, I'd definitely like to give myself another, I'd love to have another year to prove myself that I can get back. And at the same time, the situation of the marathon has changed a bit. Like, we had 11 guys qualify this time, and I think I was number 6. So, like, I've dropped down a spot or two now. So that would come into their consideration as well.
Yeah, and is all their consideration and criteria all on elite sport? Or, like, if you're, you know, a bit further down the rankings, but, you know, going to volunteer at parkrun every third week, or you're doing some great stuff in schools in Tassie and being a good ambassador in your local community, like, does that have anything to do with it? It's just all, you know, times, ranking, that's all we're looking at.
So I would suggest with someone like the TIS, it's times, ranking, whereas, you know, with Brooks or something like that, like, they appreciate all that kind of volunteer stuff. And, you know, Brooks are aware that I haven't been able to get myself out there, because, to be honest, the only really social media posts I could do right now on, say, Instagram, people would see right through it that I'm just plugging the sponsors for plugging the sponsors' reason, if that makes sense.
Oh, mate, that does my head in too, when you say a strategically placed drink bottle or a shoe in your hand, which I get, people are doing that to promote their sponsors, but yeah, sometimes it's way too corny.
It's, like, for me, like, the way I promote my sponsors is when I'm racing, when I'm doing things well, and that just shows from the amount of posts that I guess I churn out when I'm going well. But, you know, Brooks emailed me last week and said, oh, we've got this opportunity. Someone wants you to write a blog potentially, you know, going through some of your highs and lows. Like, we thought you'd be perfect for the job. Like, just things like that are really good to help, like, sponsors like that. And they get more out of kind of that community stuff, whereas the TIS, it's pretty cutthroat. And, you know, you got me here in Tassie running 2:17. On the TIS, whereas those guys in Victoria, like Moose, for example, with his 2:18, his qualifier, you know, he's probably not getting the VIS at the moment.
Nah, he'd hate the VIS. The VIS would hate him too, I reckon. He'd end up stabbing someone at the VIS or annoying him, and yeah. Back on Moose, though, like, he always loves asking people about this. Whenever he does an interview, he always asks about contracts with shoe sponsors, and do you have to do, like, is it in your contract that you've got to do X amount of Instagram posts? I know he asked Pat Tin and that, and he spoke to his mate Blake about that, and even Selma, like, is that in your, is there a dot point in your contract that you must have that social media presence and do that?
Well, social media presence is vital to the sponsorship, but there's no disclosure that says you need to post X amount of pictures. I know some of my friends in the running scene have applied to certain companies and they've been rejected due to lack of social media presence. So, while there's no number of things that you have to post or anything, you got to be a good role model and be someone that can promote the brand a bit.
That's an interesting one, though, isn't it? I was talking to Zach and Newman. He's in marketing, and we'll talk about this the other week, that you can have a... you can have a stack of followers on some of these networks, but then your engagement's actually really low. I don't know if it's just like, you know, bought followers or bots or whatever it is. But yeah, there's people out there who got 3,000 or 4,000 followers on Instagram. They put a photo up and get 150 likes, and you're like, well, you know, isn't it better to have 500 followers and get, you know, 100 likes? It's that engagement thing, and sometimes I think we get held up in the overall numbers and don't look deep enough to see how much engagement those posts are actually having.
Yeah, and then it's a really good point. And then I think also the what social media you're engaging with the fans is important too. Like, I reckon the social media companies themselves probably don't the sponsorship companies themselves probably don't realise as much. But for me, like, I reckon the best one for my sponsors would be Strava. Whereas, you know, I don't reckon your companies are out, or your medium level companies are out there thinking that. They're probably like, oh, he goes all right on Instagram, or he posts a few tweets here and there. But the people that actually really care about running, that will go out and buy the shoes, they're probably the ones on Strava, to be honest.
Yeah, I think that as well. And I was, though, like, it's a bit biased, but I think the podcasting world's actually massive as well, because you're actually getting people who are going out of their way to click download. They're going to listen to it when they're running. And it's like, you know, you're talking of way more thousands of people than you are on a Strava post or an Instagram account as well. It's kind of like everyone who's clicked on it is 100% decide to click on it, so you got the engagement there. And you're obviously talking about running stuff as well, which I'm sure that you know, marketers aren't quite up to date with the podcasting world yet.
The podcasting one's interesting. Like, I haven't thought too much into it. Probably my thoughts on it go as simple as, if you chuck your podcast up to Facebook, like, you don't get many likes compared to if you post a photo. But the people who want to listen to it, if you put it on all your social medias, you know, they're going to download it. They're going to go for a run. They're going to listen to it. So yeah, it's an interesting one for sure. Like, you mightn't get that face value likeage, I guess, but you're probably still going well from your downloads and things like that.
Yeah, and it's probably just comparing the right numbers. So, for example, like, our Inside Running page might have 350 likes on Facebook, and we might get 50 likes on a post, yet we might get 3,000 downloads like the day it comes out of the show. So it's just like, well, you got 350 here if you're just looking at Facebook posts, which makes us look pretty ordinary.
Yeah.
3,500 runners have probably decided to listen to our podcast while they're running.
Yep, exactly right.
But yeah, I'd find that hard to pitch to a sponsor because they're probably not up to date with what a podcast is or how much value it could actually have. But yeah, it's one thing we've been just digging into the last couple of weeks for our product reviews and things like that, which has been interesting looking at some of the numbers.
Yeah, no, you boys are doing a great job. As I said, they're the only podcast that I've been listening to, so you're obviously doing something right, mate.
Well, as we said before we started recording, we just got to keep the moose a bit less loose so we don't have a lawsuit coming against us in the next coming weeks. But, yeah, we might have to suspend him for a week, I reckon, and just give him a week off just to, I don't know. We've got to come up with a plan for the wise man there.
Mate, you don't want people to tune out, though.
True, exactly. It's a good balance yak there. Hey, I'm going to Japan in a couple of weeks. Tell me about Japanese marathon experiences. I've spoken to you before about Lake Biwa, but what should I expect going over?
Oh, Japan, love it. I've been there twice. Never been there for a holiday yet, and I want to get back. Both running races I went to, I kind of flew over, got there the Thursday, race Sunday, and then back home. But both were brilliant experiences. The organisers of the race set you up just really well. I'm not sure I heard on the podcast that you're getting looked after and flown over, so I assume you'll get some good treatment prior to the race there. The conditions this time of year, it's gonna be cold. That'll be great for a marathon, mate. Like you know, you don't want to be out there training 40 degrees.
Well, I liked it last week going to Hobart because I've been training like, you know, probably, I don't know, 25, 30-ish kind of thing. Afternoon runs have been in like 38 and stuff. But going to Hobart, it was like 10 degrees when we started and everything just felt easy. And I think that's got a lot to do with the weather dropping back down.
Yeah, I know last year, like I came off that Falls Creek block and, you know, I was used to summer-ish type temperatures and got over to Japan and I was just back in my element when it cooled down. You know, your heart rate's just chilled, all your body responses are feeling pretty good. I'm not sure in terms of your race, the quality and stuff, but being a Japanese race, I'm sure there'll be plenty of depth there, mate. So I'm excited for you. I reckon you'll have a good experience. And if you do all those things that you've said on the podcast, like the low expectations, all that kind of stuff, and then, you know, plan to run a negative split, then I reckon you could even surprise yourself because you've put in a couple of good runs. Like your Steigen was better than what you were tracking before Berlin, and then your half marathon in Hobart sounded pretty easy. So, yeah, I don't want to put too many expectations
on you. Don't jinx me, but yeah, no, I'm feeling good, mate. As you said, like low expectations and just looking forward to experience it. What about, how'd you go, like, carb loading and stuff before? It was like, you know, standard food accessible, or were you finding that difficult to find stuff you could understand what it was or reading the packets?
A bit of a mix. Like, if it's set up well, you'll get some kind of meal, I'd assume, set up by the organisers, like the day before the race.
Yeah, so I've got that all the day before. Yeah, I've just got some emails this week about all that stuff.
Yeah, so that kind of stuff kind of takes care of itself. And then I don't know, I just like to get down to like the closest supermarket or shopping centre nearby and just have a look for some familiar-looking stuff, really. I don't think I've been someone that's overdone the carb loading. Like, I've definitely tried to increase the percentage of carbs in the couple of days before the race, but, you know, I haven't been, you know, dying to get my hands on a bit of pasta or something like that, I guess.
Yeah, I'm going to go do that thing that Dano did. Did you hear him talking about it? Like, he's on the tree. Yeah, I got off that Skype interview and I was just like, we've got to ring this physio, like, or dietitian. And yeah, so I'm kind of booked in next week to do that. And it sounds real legit. Like, yeah, they take bloods before and after and they prick you every 20 minutes and you chuck the mask on and it kind of gets your breath. And like, yeah, I'm really looking forward to actually getting a personalized plan that says, this is what you burn, this is how much you sweat, this is what you need to replace yourself with, this is the Brady fits all thing, instead of kind of, I've dealt with some dietitians and stuff in the past, and they've been really good and I've learnt stuff, but I still think it's a matter, my three marathons, I've just ran out of gas the last 6K at just different levels.
Yeah, I'm the least qualified guy to give nutrition advice, but...
What do you do? Tell us what you do.
Hang on, just quickly, I'll just one bit of advice. I assume you're going to be in a lab and stuff like that, and I don't know whether your advice will be given on the temperature in the lab compared to your race in Japan. You
yeah,
might
have they can set that. Yeah, they can set the temperature to whatever I want it to be.
Okay, so yeah, just yeah, whatever advice they give, make sure to use it in temperature specific means, because a marathon in 5 degrees is a whole lot different to a marathon in 25.
Yeah, yeah. Because I first said that to the guy, I'm just like, you know, it's going to be cold over there. We can't. And he wanted to do it like the middle of the day, and I'm like, if it's going to be 35 degrees in a lab, I'm like, this is going to give us completely different data than what, you know, Berlin might look like or what Nobuoka might look like in 3 weeks' time. But he's like, no, you find out, you choose what we set it at, and we can. But it was a bit of a, like, I'm not sure whether to go in and say set it what it's going to be like in Japan or go for maybe something in the middle, so then we can use that same plan for when we go to Berlin later in the year.
Definitely do in the middle, mate, because yeah, then you'll have a rough idea for how you can adjust it up or down depending on, you know, if you, on, I guess, you, unless you're making teams, you're probably not going to be doing many marathons in heat, but I'd probably set it to a Berlin type.
Yeah, I was thinking of that. Maybe like a 14 or something like that. Yeah. Just, yeah, and maybe kick it up as we go.
Yeah, pace for your cold races. In terms of what I've done, you know, I think I've said a few times, until Biwa, things hadn't clicked at all. In that regard, whether it be nutrition or other factors, but things just went really well in BUR. It wasn't too complicated either. I think I just had Jesus, mate, like I've got 100 gels just sitting the other corner of my room that haven't opened. Like it's been a while since I've even thought about this stuff. I think I had water with electrolytes mixed in at, say, like 5, 15, 25, 35, and then water with a gel mixed in at 10, 20, 30, 40, just something pretty simple like that. Mm. And in Biwa, the conditions were pretty cool, and, you know, I could tell pretty early on that I don't think I needed to drink all of those late on in the race, to be honest. And, you know, I think it was just a good day.
Well, it's actually funny that I was talking to Zachary as well about this, about how little we actually invest in our nutritional plan. Like, we'll spend all these hours training these big marathon blocks, doing all these Ks, and then we kind of, I don't know, most of us just expect to kind of do a bit of trial and error or just pick out the back of the gel box and see what that says. And, I kind of think that it's a good investment to do a test like this, because it's going to hopefully set me up for, I'm going to do, you know, hopefully I've got 10 more decent marathons in me, and hopefully it can help me for all of them.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. It's something that I'd love to get, and especially now that I'd have access to it if I get back, it would be definitely something worthwhile. You know, because as you said, until then it's all trial and error, and you have that many good training sessions, and then even for me, I've done a few training marathons and whatnot, and things have went great. But yeah, so I don't know whether or not the lack of physical performance on the bad days has been physical or nutrition or what it's been, but it could definitely be a factor.
Yeah, and a lot of the trial and error is in different weather and stuff too, isn't it? And different, you know, you might do a 30K session in cool weather and everything goes well, but it's only 30K and it's cool and you think everything's fine, and yeah, a whole lot of things change when race day rolls around. Hey,
as you know, mate, just so many different factors in the marathon. Like if you have a bad day, it could just be one small thing. Mm. There's like a list of 30 things that you've got to get nearly all of them right.
Yeah, and I love how Dane said as well on Inside Running about, you know, the overseas ones, then you chuck in like another 10 things that can go wrong as well.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like I've had some good experiences with some Australian marathons just kind of cruising around. Like they've always been positive experiences for me. And I reckon part of that's just the low expectations and going out a bit slower, but yeah, they can definitely be good experiences, like Dano said, and he obviously had a good one in Hobart.
Yeah. Hey, what's work looking like for 2018? Going to teach full time, or are you just going to keep doing the CRT? Or
yeah, it's a good question. I definitely want to keep doing the CRT, so relief teaching for the listeners out there
who aren't teachers and know that terminology. Thanks for pointing that out.
Yeah, so I'm not really one, so I kind of kind of hit with me. So that's definitely a great lifestyle, and although I'm injured at the moment, like I still want to be pretty serious about it all, and I don't feel like I'm ready to go into a full time job at the moment. Like I think I've got some immaturity for my age in some regards, and I'm not quite ready for that yet. And I enjoy it, and I'm happy when I just relief teach. But given the fact that I'm going to be on crutches the first probably month of the school year, I've been in talks with the principal at the school I do most of my work at, and there might be like a part-time gig for the first, 5 weeks while someone's on long service. I'd definitely consider taking that up just because I reckon being on the relief list, I'd probably drop down a couple of places due to the crutches and the limitations with them. So if I could get some fixed work in that first month, then that would probably be in my best interest to take it. And then once I'm back in the moon boot, just go back to the relief teaching. It's an interesting question, the whole teaching stuff, because, right now I'm on holidays, and when you're not socialising and stuff, it's not running, you have so much free time. It's weird.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? It's kind of, I think you sometimes need to know other people as well who aren't teachers and don't have that much free time to just realise how much free time you actually get and how good the holidays are, because it really puts things into context pretty quick.
Yeah, like you think of my life right now when, most of my best friends are not in Tasmania right now. Like all the runners are elsewhere training, racing, things like that. Girlfriend's on a holiday with her family in WA for a couple of weeks. Like there's only a couple of my best mates that are home at the moment. It's really interesting. Like I just don't have much on at all. I'm not running. I can't cross train. I don't have any work at the moment. It's just literally just PlayStation, Big Bash, bit of Australian Open, little bit of Netflix, and that's it.
Oh, there's plenty of things you just listed there to keep you busy. They're pretty entertaining things, yeah.
I agree, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I do, yeah. Well, they're not like massively engaging and kind of purposeful life things that you're kind of getting motivated to do, I suppose.
Yeah, if people ask you what you're doing, you're like, nothing.
Netflix, yeah, you don't list all those things off. What do you do with your time? Yeah, I watch Netflix, the Australian Open, Big Bash, and play PlayStation.
Yeah.
Well, I guess with all the ups and downs with 2017, have you learnt like something significant about yourself? Like it must have been a really good opportunity to reflect and kind of just figure out, really who Josh Harris is when things aren't going quite as smooth. Well, they did go really smooth, but then the ups and downs, I guess.
Yeah, it's such a weird year, mate. Like,
well, yeah. Imagine this time last year.
I know. I look back at my life from my whole life until last year, and I had basically no hiccups. Like, everything was always, like, running was always progressing for the most part. Like, there are a couple of patches where they don't, but not anything to worry about. I was always happy and pretty settled in terms of my social, like, relationships, things like that. And then last year was just the biggest roller coaster. Like as you'd know, like, I broke up with my 4-year girlfriend, and that hit me pretty hard. Then, like, a week later, qualified for World Champs. Had the best running patch of my life while I was still, being pretty social on Saturday nights, leading up to Worlds. Things going awesome, running PBs, and then get to Worlds and break my foot. And then after that, like, I've had the best running year of my life. I've had the worst running year of my life. I've had the best social year of my life. I've had the worst social year of my life, all in one, after being so steady for so long. So it's definitely been a year to think about and reflect about, and it's an interesting one when you mention about, like, who is Josh Harris without running, because I still don't have a full answer for that, like, because I obviously haven't given up on running. It's still my full ambition to get back to where I was, but I've definitely learnt that a setback like this, which, I think it's as bad as it's going to get in terms of my running career, like, it's defining. It's either, it could cause me to stop, but I've been fine. Like, I don't even know why. Like, I'm not a big reader, like, to of books, to like mentality books and things like that, but I'm really happy in myself with the way I've been able to cope with this and deal with it. Like, I don't really know what I'm saying right now. It's just flowing out, but I feel like I'm a pretty resilient person in that sense, which has been good to know. In terms of my injury, hindsight's an interesting thing. Like, I've had time to reflect on when this first started hurting in 2014. If I got this checked out straight away and had, you know, 8 weeks off, does it come good? And do I then not really have any issues with it? But on the flip side, do I miss a big block of training at some point in the last 3 years and never qualify for world champs and not make the team? Like, there's so many ifs and buts, but, you know, I could have got it checked out earlier, but I mightn't have made the team. Now I've made a team, I want to make another one, but my foot's pretty cooked. So that's definitely been time for reflecting, and, you know, depending on your mindset on the day, you have pretty mixed thoughts, but my motivation's still really strong, and as I said, I'm pretty happy with the way I've been able to deal with it. And I think one thing that has made me really happy that I didn't really know would be the case prior to injury, I thought I'd get fat. Like, I'm not the healthiest eater. My diet's probably pretty moderate, I'd say. Not too unhealthy, but not the healthiest runner's diet out there. But you know, since I've got back from Europe, I've put on like 2 kilos in like 4 or 5 months, and I'm so happy with that. Like, I think I could live a normal life for now anyway and not be fat, which that makes me really happy.
It's pretty amazing, isn't it? 2 kilos, like, and you're a guy who was doing, you know, 200 plus Ks a week kind of thing. So high mileage, burned a lot of calories. You're not doing that at all anymore, and you're still, 2 kilos around your race weight.
I must say the 5 that went on before I got home from Europe as well. But I was probably about 61, went up to 66 by the time I got home. And, you know, when I weighed myself a couple of weeks ago, I'm 68. And I think the pool running, although, like, I feel like it's just better for the muscles. Like, I look better. Like, I could be doing not much and I'd probably just look a little bit sloppy. I'd probably still be the same weight. But I think the pool running, the repetitive nature of it, and some of those arm and core muscles and whatnot, I'm pretty happy with the way my body looks, I guess, which is a good thing.
Hey, you did touch on hindsight there as well. If there's some listeners out there, and it's kind of hard because you can't warn everyone against every injury, but in hindsight, were there things that you just felt were different, or, you know, tiny little things that you noticed about your body that didn't seem to click, that people might be out there, you know, jogging now and they've had a niggle for a while and they're half thinking about it, but it's not really doing their head in that much, that you could maybe just offer a bit of advice for someone who's been in that situation?
Yeah, well, as you know, mate, like, I had the reputation of being the most resilient, like, injury-proof runner going around, so it's really hard, and it's not something that I've had to deal with in the past. So for those that don't know, this injury to my talus has kind of bugged me since 2014, but it would just warm up and it would go away, so I never really worried about it too much. And obviously the talus is such a strong bone that it took that long to actually really break it. I don't think I can give good advice on general niggles, probably just be smart. Like, if you miss a day of training, like, you'd rather do that than miss a year of training. Get on top of that stuff when you can. And, you know, obviously, if you've got a really important race coming up, you know, sometimes you have to run through those kinds of things and bite the bullet. But if your yearly plan is in the early phases, you can afford to take some time just to get that body right. And I don't know what I'd do again. As I said, if I didn't keep running through for 4 years, I mightn't have got that singlet. So we don't know.
Yeah. Do you think there's something in that? I was talking to Andy Allison about the other week, and Zacha as well, when I was rooming with him down in Hobart. Like, those days, you know, you occasionally get that day where you've got to warm your foot up on a golf ball, or you've got to do the 20 minutes of the foam roller before you can get out of the bed, or walk into the toilet when you first get up is like you're an old man, and like your foot, like, And then it becomes like, oh, yeah, that happens 3 days a week. And then that happens every day a week. And then that's just who you are. And I know you said you're resilient, yep. but sometimes your resilience might not be, or might be more of a disadvantage than an advantage.
Yeah, that basically that timeline that you said, like looking back, you don't think about it at the time, but I'm sure the first day that injury happened back in 2014, I'm sure it wasn't, like, it didn't get much worse. And I know this from, like, probably mid-2015. But in that first 12 months of the injury, I'm sure there was a point where it escalated and I just thought, oh, well, you know, we can deal through this. And then I got to the point where it's just part of my life.
Yeah.
You're very right,
like
definitely.
The injury is always 4 out of 10, but you just get better at dealing with the 4 out of 10 injury until something snaps or breaks or whatever it is.
Yeah, and I guess the bad thing in with this one was, obviously it's a serious bone, but the 4 out of 10 injury when I woke up in the morning becomes a 0 out of 10 injury 5 minutes into every run.
Yeah.
And so you finish every run on top of the world because, you know, your last K's bloody 2 minutes quicker than your first, and you're like, oh geez, like I'm feeling good. And so you go back inside after you run and you're feeling good because your body's good, and you kind of forget about it again until you do your pre-warm-up exercises just to get yourself out the door in the afternoon.
Yeah, I think there's plenty in there for the listeners if you're experiencing any of those kind of symptoms. Yeah, definitely just step back, and I think sometimes you got to look at that from the outside. It's just not you. Like, yeah, when people tell me it takes me this long to get to the toilet and I run, you see it on Strava, like people do their first K at 6 minutes because they just need to do that to get moving. It's like, well,
not normal.
Yeah, just letting you know, that's kind of not normal to be doing that kind of stuff, and something must be going wrong, and you're just coping with it.
Yep.
Hey, has your life mantra changed? I would have asked you in the very first episode that we did what your mantra is, and I try to ask everyone, and it's good to kind of get people on, repeated guests, just to see that what they're thinking now. What was the first one you told me? Can you remember?
I'm just trying to think, mate. It would have either been something about consistency or being trying to just not trying to worry or stress too much about little things. I reckon it would have been something along there. And I don't know. I think given the fact that I feel like I'm coping pretty well considering the injury, I feel like that probably still rings true today. I guess you can't change the past. You know, you just got to deal with what's happened and learn from it and try and do the right things to reach whatever your goals are, I guess.
Yeah, spot on. Because, yeah, you've spoken about that so many times. You've dropped it in, like, if you could change your past, would you? Because it may have changed where you ended up. And it's, super important not to do that. Hey, you said you're not a reader, so you're not going to recommend any books, but have you been watching any good docos, or what are you watching on Netflix? Give the listeners something they might be able to hit up.
Oh, mate, like, this is a bad question for me too, because I've always been more of a PlayStation guy than Netflix, and I'm basically delving into the Netflix world now that I've got a girl. So I basically give her the controller and she can choose what she wants to watch. So in terms of Netflix, I'm not going to recommend anything there. To be perfectly honest, I'd love if some of the listeners that might have some interest in the PlayStation, I know there are a couple based on some tweets I've got over the last year or so, if you can recommend me some good games at the moment, I'd really love that, because I'm getting pretty tired of the same sporting games over and over that don't really evolve from year to year. So if you can give me some ideas for some new PlayStation games, then I'd really welcome that.
Help him out. Not only that way, help him out. Hit him up on the social media as well, because we want to let the world know that Josh Harris isn't dead just because he's not running. So
how many Twitter interactions can I get in the next week?
Yeah, I'm going to say that actually, if we both shared on our own Twitter, let's see if we can get you up a few. Just let everyone know where to find you again, though.
Oh, yeah. _ Josh Harris on Twitter and Instagram. Josh Harris on Strava, but there's not heaps going on there at the moment, and there won't be for a while. And then I'm more than happy to accept people on Facebook and have a chat, a message, especially the next few weeks. I'd love to have some new chats with some people that I haven't interacted with before or for a while, so that would be good.
wealth of knowledge, 64 minute half marathon guy, 29 10K, and a 2:17 guy. Hit him up. There you go. Give him some love. He needs needs a few more people in his corner, even when things aren't going good. I reckon the Tell Me Your Tale family be able to reach out to you for sure, mate.
Thanks, mate. Appreciate it.
Thanks for coming on again. Love your work, and we'll keep chatting. We'll keep doing these. As I said before, we hit record. Like, we've inside running now. Probably a bit more responsible for running news. I just want to have chats with people and keep the listeners in the loop and kind of just do what I want over here and Tell Me Your Tales, and bring some good stories to people's ears, a bit longer interviews, and I'd be more than happy to keep catching up with you, mate, and keeping track of the journey.
Yeah, same to you, mate. Like, good luck with the marrow in a couple of weeks and the season. It's you're doing great things. So are the boys, and wish them well too. For Brad, for B-Wire, if he needs to hit me up for any advice, then feel free.
True, and I'll tell him that. What do you reckon he's got to run?
I really like his little unload week, because as I've spoken to you about in the past, I was unfit 7 weeks out, and he's in a better spot than I was at that point, and then I just loaded up big time this next 6 weeks, and I got the job done. So I don't want to put any pressure on him, but I like the way he's moving, and then...
I like the way he's doing that hills, those hilly tempos and stuff, where you might only hit 330s, but you're working hard on the hills.
Yeah, and then he's focusing more on the process than the outcome, which I think is definitely, definitely important, and hopefully on the race day too. And then Moose's ideas in regards of trying to develop some of those efficiencies at the shorter distances, basically exactly what I've got to do to become a 2:12 to 2:14 guy myself, so... He's basically doing what I want to do. So, yeah, good luck to all your boys.
Thanks, mate. Love your work. As I said, the listeners, reach out to Josh and tell him you heard him here, and, yeah, that'd be fantastic. Thanks again, mate.
No worries, mate. See ya.
Hey, guys, it's me again. I haven't done one of these outros for a long time, but I thought I would just let you know that I read a really good book last week, and if you're looking for something to read, I think you'll get a lot of value out of Ego is the Enemy by Ryan Holiday. Really good book, and really enjoyed it, and also Frank Shorter's book, My Marathon. I think I spoke about it on one of the podcasts going around somewhere, but yeah, two really good books, and if you've got a bit of spare time or looking for something to read, I really recommend that. Hope you enjoyed that show with Josh Harris. As always, more details at bradytrailfull.com, and yeah, enjoy whatever you got going on.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.